Well, hello, everyone, and my name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all our Tenpenny Files premium members. You can find direct links to this and other content by going to the navigation bar at the top of the page of drtenpenny.com. That's drtenpenny.com. During our deep dive discussions, we want to have a conversation with our guests about what inspires them and finds out a little bit more about who they are. So let me introduce you today to our guest, author Donald Jeffries. So you have done so much in the world of investigating conspiracy theories that have turned out to be conspiracy fact. And you started with the JFK conspiracy, and you've done so much in terms of rewriting history. So tell us a little bit on all of your research. What would you say are two of the most eye-popping conspiracy theories that turned out to be conspiracy facts? Sort of like the aha or the, oh my God, I can't believe this sort of things. Are there a couple that really stick out to you from the hundreds that you've investigated?
Well, I mean, people tell me all the time, you think everything's a conspiracy. And yeah, I pretty much do, because I think we're being run by conspirators. And I think this is how they do business. It's a way of life for them. They don't know any other way. They conspire against the public interest. This is what they do. So, I think one of the most amazing conspiracy theories, and it's a reality, and the establishment has to acknowledge it, is the Operation Northwoods, which happened in the JFK administration. And was one of the reasons when he vetoed it, to his everlasting credit, one of the reasons why I think it's another reason for him to be killed, because when he didn't go along with this plan, and it also plays over into some of the really deep rabbit hole type things we see with Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, and things like that now, where people talk about that, because we see the genesis of it happening in the early 1960s. Operation Northwoods was a real plan. So if you talk about it, they're going to have to admit it happened. And it was hatched by the CIA, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff all approved it. And it was basically a hoaxy type of Sandy Hook type of thing to have fake plane crashes, fake, maybe real, fake murders, a series of terrible things happen, and to blame it on Cuba so that we would have a second Bay of Pigs. Now, most people, again, it's down the memory hole, but look it up. Operation Northwoods was a real thing, and it's important to me. I find it incredibly significant when people like me talk about Sandy Hook or the Boston bombing or even the recent shooting in Colorado, things like that, where if you look at these things, there's so many theatrical elements to them. There's so many reasons to question them. People say you're crazy when you talk about crisis actors. Well, go to crisisactors.org. They exist. And one of the great things Alex Jones did years ago is he was the first one to talk about all the drills that were happening around the country and been happening for 20 years or so, where they used these crisis actors and they used the military and they used the police. And I, in my book, Bullyocracy, I describe them happening, and they're still happening over and over again in schools, where they have these scenes that happen where they have a contrived story, and it'll be very politically correct. They'll cast the shooter in the role of a demented homeschool parent, a gun nut, a pro-life advocate. It's always that. It's never a crazed climate change guy or something. It fits the narrative. And they hire crisis actors. They have fake blood. All the stuff that you see the crazy people talk about, they do it in our school systems. And at the very least, it's psychologically crazy. It's abuse of the children. And I describe it all in Bullyocracy, but these things go back again. Operation Northwoods is the first one I know of that was in that vein. And JFK, basically, I mean, everybody in his administration, approved it. And he just kind of said, no, that's insane. I'm not doing that. And so he didn't approve it. And thank goodness it didn't happen, but that was then. So just imagine how they might have perfected that. But I think that's a real important conspiracy because of that. And,
You said it's Operation Northwoods.
Operation Northwoods. Yeah, you can just Google it. I mean, I don't know. I haven't searched for it recently, so they may try to veer you off into fact checkers' directions. But it was a real thing, much like the Gulf of Tonkin. These are things that they have to, and weapons of mass destruction, all these things that they have to pretty much acknowledge were not real. And we're kind of psyops. I go back to, I think another important one is the original, what I call the first false flag in American history. And that was the Remember the Maine, Hell with Spain in 1898. And that was when we crossed a big line where up until that point, we had never gone outside the continental United States to wage war. Even Lincoln didn't do that. But they claimed that the Maine, the USS Maine, was blown up by this. And even now, if you look it up, the court historians have long admitted, yeah, well, it wasn't true. The Spanish didn't do it. But at the time, William Randolph Hearst got his start there. You know, he supposedly told a reporter, I'll get you a damn war with my stories. And that was his line. And it's an important thing because it paved the way for the false flags to come and the sinking of the Lusitania in World War I, which we also know now was a lie. Pearl Harbor, which I write about as a cover-ups.
So keep going. What you were talking about the sinking. Did you say the sinking of the
Lusitania? That was World War One, but it started with the sinking of the Maine in 1898 because that paved the way for the Spanish-American War, and that's another American hero, Teddy Roosevelt, which he was the first imperialist. Really, I mean, Lincoln was an imperial president. Roosevelt was the first imperialist that wanted to go into other lands, and I think he wanted an American empire. Wanted to emulate the British Empire. But again, he's remembered favorably now, and he's another guy that has tons of real racist comments on the records as well, too. He's remembered as a progressive. But so once we, I think, allow that again, it's they don't cite that as precedent, but that's the way our foreign policy came to be conducted. So once you had that, then in World War One. They did the same kind of thing. They found an incident. They lied about it, thinking of Louisiana. We got into World War One, and a World War Two. Obviously, the famous Pearl Harbor. And I have a lot in Crimes and Cover-Ups. No question that Franklin Roosevelt knew about it. He basically waved the Japanese into Pearl Harbor. And but these are things that the court historians won't admit. They won't possibly acknowledge that any of the heroes, and they have cardboard heroes as much as they have cardboard villains. And people like FDR, Teddy Roosevelt, certainly Abraham Lincoln, these are heroes to them. And so they can do no wrong. So whatever they write something is to try to establish that they see we were right. They really were heroes, and they'll just sweep everything under the rug like that. But so to find one or two conspiracy theories, I don't know. I say Operation Northwoods because I think most people, and you seem surprised about it too. I don't think most people know about that one. Most of the other one, and I probably, I don't know if you call it a conspiracy, but we talked about it earlier, the story behind you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Most people don't know that. And the history of it is that it was cited by Oliver Wendell Holmes to justify Woodrow Wilson throwing World War One protesters in prison. So think of that when you hear that term, World War One protest. War protesters are not yelling fire in a crowded theater. That's what the precedent was. So, if it had a ruling on somebody who actually was yelling fire in a crowded theater or something, then that would maybe make sense. But in this case, it had nothing at all to do with it. I think at that time you could see they were already trying to stifle free speech.
Well, when you start listening to some of these really unwind and kind of behind the story of the real story historically, it sort of helps put some of the present tense things in perspective in terms of the massive censorship that's going on right now in social media and the whole scam of the whole plandemic scam of what they've been able to do, because people don't understand the history of the mask and the submissiveness of what that really means in terms of prisoners and the divisiveness and the tools that they're using to divide us and all of those things. You mentioned that you're in the process of writing a new book on this whole scamdemic sort of thing. So where are you with that right now?
I'm close to 200 pages, and my books are usually long, so I don't know how long I'm going to. And that one's hard because we don't know where this is going. I said in the beginning, I don't know what the end game was, and I certainly don't know now. It appears like this might be a permanent thing. You have people that want to keep the mask on forever.
It's crazy because even in places like Florida, that you don't have to wear them. Texas, you don't have to wear them. Most places in Ohio, you really don't. And people do it anyways. I mean, yeah. what is that all about? I mean, how did that come about? I mean, people are willing to be slaves. I mean, willing to be slaves and subjected, and this whole, virtue signaling nonsense that they talk about. I'm wearing this to protect you. Please don't. I'm really healthy. Please don't. Please take it off. You don't feel the need to do that. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's trust the science. And I think this is really shown how divided, I mean, Trump obviously showed how divided the country was. And I have thoughts on that. If you read my blog further, you'll see what I think about Trump, who I voted for. And I initially was really attracted to his revolutionary rhetoric, because like people told me, he sounds all like you that I've been talking about for years behind the scenes, cutting down the infrastructure and things like, this is ridiculous, infrastructure's a joke, that kind of thing, and fake news and all that. But I think that however you look at him, the country became divided, and Trump became like a lightning rod for everything. And when this pandemic hit, Trump, for whatever reason, was still in that lightning rod position, even though he was still, he was saying good stuff. Like, and this is what Trump would do. He'd throw great stuff out there and tweet stuff and say, yeah, right on. But then he'd push the vaccines and things like that. So he was playing both sides like he did too often. And people that hate him, and Trump derangement syndrome is a real thing. I mean, people, it's like a psychotic condition. I've lost so many friends over it. But for whatever reason, he became associated with this. And the idea was that Trump is like the opposition to it. And so we have to cling to the virus, because that'll piss Trump off. I mean, that's what I get the sense of. I mean, almost everybody that I see that is clinging to this narrative, that is wearing three masks, wants to get the second vaccine, they all hate Trump. And I'm not sure why that is. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, again, somebody being kind of on the left. Now, my friend Naomi Wolf is on the left. She's gotten very vocal lately. She calls it biofascism. I think that's a great term for it, what we're going through here. But people, they are so emotionally invested in this. I compare it to the Holocaust, because, we're called COVID deniers. A lot of us are. They even use the same terminology. People are so emotional, you can't talk to them about it, because they are, it's almost the same kind of thing. I lost a loved one, somebody, you to tell me that, my brother's uncle's cousin died of this, that kind of thing. And so you can't talk to them, and you're dangerous. I've been called dangerous. And I have people that wrote glowing reviews of my books that interviewed me. They deleted me and blocked me and called me dangerous and all because of this. It's a particular issue, and I can't help but speak my mind, and I'm sorry. It's from the very beginning, it's been absurd. And putting this book together, you're seeing, and the thing about it is, Dr. Penpenny, is that you can look and you can use the CDC and the WHO. I use them as my primary source for almost everything, because they're telling you everything. It's all there. It's hiding in plain sight. They're telling you early on, back a year ago now, where I published it over and over again. I tried to tell people, look at what the CDC directive is saying. It's telling you that it instructed hospitals at that time to list the cause of death as being from COVID, even if tests were inconclusive or unavailable.
Or you didn't even test.
That was then. And you didn't even test, right. And John Rappaport, who's done great work on this, I had him on my radio show way back early on, and he's the first one that said, hey, they're including presumptive. I said, what? So sure enough, I looked at it. If you look in the CDC weekly reports they put out, they have an asterisk, a disclaimer there. It says, note, this includes presumptive or presumed cases. In other words, cases that weren't proven by a test. So their numbers are absurd. And then last fall, the CDC came out and said, 94% of the however many 400,000, whatever they claim the number is now, actually died from other causes. They told you that. Only 6% died from COVID.
Yeah. And they just
94%. So
they just came out with a report just a few days ago that said there's a 1 in 10,000 chance, 1 in 10,000 chance that you could contract any form of COVID illness from a surface contact. So all of this chemical spraying and all this sanitizing and sterilizing and touchless society and standing apart, 1 in 10,000 chance of catching anything, not only COVID, a SARS-CoV-2 infection, a coronavirus infection, but influenza, anything, One in 10,000, but yet we'll mask and we're wearing gloves and we're not willing to give it up. So I love this analogy, what you said of, you know, it's like COVID derangement syndrome is the synonym for Trump derangement syndrome. I think that's really good. It's really good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can't, they cannot be reasoned with. And I stopped trying again, because it's really an emotional thing. The only thing I can liken it to is it's a Holocaust, where it's that emotional and that powerful to people. So I don't even attempt to anymore. If they're not going to, I've tried over and over again. You know, when I said, this is CDC, this is not a conspiracy theory. They're telling you. I didn't tell you 94% of the cases were for else. They did. Early on in Italy, they told you 99% of the cases were for something else. I mean, they told you that. And people just want to hear it. And but I think it's important, because this doesn't appear to have any end in sight. And now, obviously, you know, with the flu disappearing, and, you know, because what they were saying early on, it's not just the flu, the conspiracy theory. Well, okay, if it's not just the flu, then what happened to the flu? And again, the CDC tells you 98% gone. Not me. Again, you look at there, and it's like, well, okay, so isn't that an amazing coincidence that the same time this virus comes along, the flu disappears? How fortuitous.
And the virus is cured.
What comes out of it?
Heart disease, death from cancer,
yes.
You can't just die from old age anymore. It has to be COVID. You know, you can't have a heart attack or a stroke or a ruptured appendix or gunshot wound to the head. None of it is, all of it's COVID related.
Yes.
Head, you know, so yeah.
And they called out, doom all of that. They put, you know, including suicides, gunshot wound victims and so forth. And, you know, it's just trusting science. I mean, I don't know where it is where you are, but I, you know, it's laughable. You go out to a restaurant here and, you know, have to wear your mask going in the doorway. But as soon as you get to the table, you can take it off. I said, you know, I don't know what kind of science that is. Well, they had a curfew. What kind of science says that, you know, the virus is dangerous after a particular time?
This is not science. I know. I made this list because I keep adding to it because it keeps getting longer. It's called I'm gonna write a little article about it. I'm gonna post it at a blog somewhere. It's called The Smartest Virus Ever. It can tell time. It can count the number of people in a room. You know, it can tell if there's more than three. It can tell if you've stayed more than 30 minutes visiting someone in the nursing home. It can tell if it's after 10 o'clock at night. It can tell you the difference between talking and singing. It can tell the difference between a wind or a percussion instrument. It can tell you how loud you're singing. It can measure distance. It can measure height. It can judge what room you're in. I mean, it can tell the difference if you're in a church or if you're in Home Depot. You know, it can tell whether or not you're a group of church gatherers or you're a group of anarchists like Black Lives Matter. It can tell the calendar.
Yes,
it can read a calendar, because on June 15th, these things are going to go away and we're going to lift all these restrictions on. So it can read the calendar. I mean, if people really would understand how stupid this whole thing, it's insane. So I want to go back to something that we talked about in just a second.
Sure.
So before we started the recording, you were talking a little bit about your lifetime career in IT and what kind of happened with all of that. Tell us a little bit about, we know all about your brilliant mind and your incredible investigative work. What did you do? Tell us a piece about that side of you.
Well, it's relevant. The only reason I bring it up is because I worked in IT, but I worked for the largest healthcare organization on the East Coast, and I'll tell them, they're another health system. And just to show you how encompassing this corruption is, and again, they were getting rid of all the old guard there, and they ended up firing me with two other people. We were the three oldest people left in IT. And they had already replaced most of IT with largely foreign visa workers, almost all from India. And again, I've written about that subject because they want to bring people in that are work for a half or a third of what you're paying people. And that's the idea of it. Same way with the, you know, illegal immigration at the bottom and foreign visa workers higher up the ladder to try to lower the cost for business. And again, this is something conservatives don't talk about. Donald Trump mentioned, but again, unfortunately, he didn't do enough about it. But I saw it personally in my industry. But I was just doing, we had been doing this for years. Two guys had been helping out a handicapped coworker because he couldn't walk very well. He had a cane We were basically swiping a time card for them. They were still making us use this antiquated system, which no one else had. They were trying to get rid of us. And so we had to go to a separate room and use it. It was kind of a dinosaur thing, but it was a walk for him, and he couldn't. So we just had been doing it for a long time just so he wouldn't have to walk there, and we'd hand him back the card. So technically, we were violating time card policies. But it was open secret. Everybody knew we were doing it. And like I told him, I said, do you think I would have been doing this if I thought I could be fired? I got nothing out of it. I was helping somebody else. But I was doing a good deed. No warning, nothing. After 44 years, they fired me. I didn't get any severance package, nothing. I tried to, it's awful. And I tried to, and all it would need, Dr. Penny, is one local news story to shine light on it. Handicapped guy fired, two people helping him fired for trouble. You know, that's a human interest story. And if anything else would need it, he was openly gay. You talk about a story for the ACLU, and I tried to contact the ACLU, weren't interested. They just
they
again
weren't
because
interested?
Because ANOVA is like it's like trying to interest Fox News or anyone in some kind of story about Big Pharma. Look who their advertisers are.
Wow.
And so ANOVA does a lot. They're one of the biggest advertisers in local media in my area. So I know some of the local reporters, and they wouldn't touch it. One of them kind of interested for a while, but that's all it would need. Because they couldn't survive the public relations disaster there. But as long as the media doesn't cover it, it doesn't matter. So I've had to swallow, and it's a hard pill for me to swallow because, you know, I just can't accept losing because I just want them to admit that they were wrong and to apologize to me. And I'm not looking for a huge award or anything like that. But I don't like having that black mark on me that I was fired and for helping some. And nobody, to be honest with you, when I was actually trying to get another job after that, I mean, nobody believed my story that this is why I was fired. You were there 44 years and you were fired for helping a handicapped coworker? Yeah, I was. I was thought, well, obviously he must have done something really bad and he's just lying or something. But if I have that personal stake in it. So also having worked for the medical industrial complex, and I worked within the hospital facility for a number of years before they moved things off site. So I saw the sausage being made. And, I've been very critical of that. In fact, I've thought about writing a book just about that. At what I call the medical industrial complex.
Why don't
so,
you?
Yeah, well, I even got the title on life support, which I think is a great title. but I mean, having worked in the system and have loved ones that have been sick and everything, I'm not fond of it. And you probably know all too well. I think that the profit motive kills it. And I think the big pharma aspect kills it. The insurance companies, so many bad aspects to it. But the overall sense you get is that this pandemic, this narrative is being driven by the medical industrial complex and the politicians. Now I can't believe anybody thinks our politicians care about our world. Certainly everybody should be, nobody should be that naive. But if you've had experience with the medical industrial complex, you should know the CDC, the WHO, who both been caught lying about the swine flu in 2009, same kind of thing, inflating in numbers. To think they care about your welfare, they just don't. They really don't. So this is not for your own good as they're trying to sell it. This is about control. The last thing, if they cared about your welfare, they wouldn't be suppressing cancer cures and alternative forms. I mean, I think Laetril, the apricot kernel, is still banned, although Ronald Reagan secretly had it injected to him. He had cancer during his presidency, but it was still legal for everyone else. But, these kinds of things, they would, and that's one of the good things Trump did. Trump did sign a bill about making alternative forms of medicine and natural
it was the right
remedies.
It was the right to try bill.
Right.
If you really, really read the specifics about that bill, though, it's not very well written. I mean, hands of farmer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, right to try, yes, after all of the other conventional therapies have failed you and we've destroyed your immune system. There's nothing left of your liver, your kidneys, or anything like that.
Yeah,
now
you
can try legally instead of alternatively try, alternative types of therapies. You know,
it's just a watered down. I mean,
it's just a watered down bunch of nonsense of what was already there. I want to read something into that and then ask you a question about it. This comes from your March 2021 blog. And I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit because I really want your take on this. I just found it fascinating. So it says the conspiracies and corruption you were discovering back then seemed distant and unapproachable. Now they're right in front of us where we can almost touch them. Humanity accepts that the boss is crooked, the teacher plays favorites, parents are abusive, children are ungrateful. What wrong seems to prevail a lot more than right. There is no justice in our courts. They won't let you say that on television or in Congress, and nice guys finish last. And yet, boiling down the specifics, those same people blanch when you say 9/11 is an inside job, or talk about Sandy Hook or Pizzagate or massive fraud in the 2020 election. I mean, I read you wrote that in your blog. I couldn't have said it better myself. So my question for you is about that is, why do you believe there is such a disconnect between the in-your-face reality and what people commonly want to hold on to as beliefs and not believe that like 9/11 was an inside job after 20 years? You know, I mean, why do you think there's such a disconnect there?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with just personality and taking personally. For instance, people, the other line know faster, you know, that's Murphy's Law. Everybody kind of relates to that. I mean, of course, on the surface, it's ridiculous. How could it be? But we all have seen it play out in our lives. But that's something because it's happening to us. So I think unless you are one of the vocal members of 9/11 survivors, one of the ones that, to their credit, tried to say this is bogus. I mean, most of them went on board and accepted the money and you know, listen to CNN. But unless it happens to you, it's kind of, you know, like it's like if you have a loved one with some kind of disability. If you have someone born with Down syndrome, you're not going to say retard ever again. But if you don't, it's kind of distant. You know, it's not true. I think it's a lot of it's a personal aspect, is that, you know, yeah, they're screwing me over. But no, there's not any big conspiracy to screw the rest of you guys. It's just me, you know. And I was, you know, when I was writing Survival of the Richest, my economic book, I remember reading that one of the authors of another book similar to mine had interviewed a bunch of billionaires, and it was the same kind of thing where all of the billionaires thought that the rest of every other billionaire wasn't worth it. He didn't earn it, you know, but they thought they had. And it's that kind of thing where, you know, it's a personal thing where, you know, I'm getting screwed, but you didn't. That's different. And I think that's why they don't tend to believe it unless they're impacted by it. And I think that's what you have and plus, again, they've absorbed it's the someone would have talked mentality. I run into that all the time. Someone would have talked. Well, you know, they're still talking. Plenty of people have talked. A lot of them have been silenced, killed, fired. Look at the whistleblowers. You know, Julian Assange talked, you know, Edward Snowden talked, Chelsea Manning talked, plenty of people out there that talked to lots of people I talked to on my show that were whistleblowers that risked everything. And it's amazing that anyone does still talk, because you get nothing out of it. You get ostracized, you get fired, and so many of the people that I talked to, because they're usually males, most of the times their wives, their marriages broke up, their kids don't support them, and yet they still, you know, do this. And it's a special kind of courage to do that, to have your whole life destroyed for a principle. So there's every reason for people not to come forward, but it's much easier, I think, for most people. And I think also the economic aspect of it is that, you know, you'll find things more receptive, people more conspiracies, like, you know, if you're living in, you know, inner city or a trailer park or something, and you're getting screwed over really bad by the system, you're at the bottom part. They're the ones that are really being impacted by immigration, for instance, things like that. They're much more receptive. Oh, yeah, it's all rigged. But if you're somebody from the hardest people to talk to, or you talk to somebody like went to Harvard or something, it's doing really well. It's, you know, making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, or maybe more, doing what they love. They're not getting their hands dirty. You can't convince them there's any conspiracy. I mean, you know what? The system's worked great for them. And I think that's the problem, is if people have been very successful, it's hard to convince them that there's a conspiracy to stop people, because they, of course, have a good opinion of themselves. Well, I succeeded. You can do it. Why can't you? And that's the attitude, is, well, I can do it. You need to. And I think that's the only explanation I can think of. And plus, again, a lot of it is interest, too, because I found from the JFK assassination, even people like Tucker Carlson, who I find does a lot of good work up to a point on certain things, well, he swallows the Warren Commission nonsense. He thinks Oswald did it, because I think he came from a Republican family that probably hated the Kennedys. And a lot of people, I think, if they don't like the subject, they're not going to, it's just not going to be interesting to them.
Interesting. You know, something... I think that there's that what you say resonates and has a lot of truth, because it's, you know, I've spent the last going on 21 years of my life doing the deep dive investigation on problems associated with vaccines. And to me, it's just as clear as, you know, as the nose on your face. I mean, the vaccines are not safe. They don't protect you. They definitely cause harm, and they're absolutely unnecessary, all of them. And the only, and the people who get it, sadly enough, are the ones who have vaccine-injured children. You know, and the reason I keep doing what I'm doing and why I've gotten so involved with the whole COVID topic and everything is because I've tried to sow enough seeds, and I'm always trying to get ahead of the curve, trying to get people to, you know, first of all, when you're dating somebody, before you even get married, you know, put the vaccine topic on the table. You know, when we have kids, what do you think about vaccines? Put it on the table to begin with. If you are married and you're starting to talk about a family, put it there, and for sure decide what you're going to do about vaccines before you're in labor. You know, I mean, you know, that's not the time to be saying when they're bringing in the hepatitis B and the vitamin K going, huh, vaccines, huh? Never really thought about it. But sadly enough, it's the people who've gotten injured are the ones who pay attention. So I totally resonate with what you said. If it doesn't really touch you, but it kind of comes down to that story about, you know, first they came after the Jews and then they came after the Catholics.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, yep. Then there was nobody left when they came after me. I think that that's important.
Well, you know, I use that analogy all the time.
Yeah.
And that's from the left. That's from the classical left. It comes from World War II. First they came for the Jews, and they came for the communists, and they came for the so it's a very leftist kind of comment. But the left used to love that. They used to use that all the time. But now the left is our crazy woke left are the ones driving this narrative. So they don't want to hear it. I try to use it all the time. Don't you, you know, doesn't this ring home to you that they're, you know, eventually they might say, you can't say that. Let's fire you for saying that.
Yes, which comes up to the other thing. I love the blog that you wrote about climate change scammer Greta Thunberg. And I totally agree with you. They don't care about air, water pollution. They don't care about any of that stuff. And they don't care about this pandemic. I mean, the same people who want to depopulate the planet ostensibly are making a shot that's going to like keep you healthy and well. I mean, like, seriously. And I love, you know, it's all about controlling behavior. But I love what you said, that our leaders are beyond all satire, because I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, you know, in the Babylonian Bee, which is a newspaper that's written based on satire, when you read their articles, they are unbelievably accurate and true. So when we've got leaders, I mean, their articles are funny, but they're on point. And sometimes you read them, you go, how'd they get away with this? Because this is like so accurate. How did they format it in satire so they get away with it? So when you look at all the historical things that you've dug through and all the conspiracy facts that you've uncovered, and now we've got leaders that are just beyond satire. And I mean, you know, it was so this whole thing about the election and the election fraud. And what was so disturbing to me the most about it was the fact that 80 federal judges and our U.S. Supreme Court were not even willing to look at the fact pattern. Not that they were going to look at the fact pattern and vote against it or rule against it, but not even willing to look at the facts. To me, that is the most discouraging thing about our entire country. So you have such a deep historical research background of where we've come and trying not to repeat learn the lessons of history. What do you think that we can do, or what should we be moving towards to try to reconcile any of this? Is there even any reconciling it to be done? Is it going to happen?
Well, I always say that I don't know where the silver lining is. I'm looking at the light of the tunnel. I don't know. I mean, at this point, it's impossible not to be a doom and gloom guy. And what you mentioned about the courts, That was a real slap in the face. But we saw it, you know, back when, you know, and Roger Stone, my name is identical. You know, I've had people like, you know, conspiracies and cover-up, crimes and cover-up book was the foreword was written by Ron Paul. I was very gratified to have Ron Paul put his name on my book. But Roger Stone wrote the foreword to Hidden History, the paperback version, well, back then. And now, of course, it was. I thought it was great at the time. And now I'm not so sure because so many people hate him. You know, I don't know how much it helps or not anymore, but I had him on my radio show right after he was raided by the authorities. And I thought we really, that exemplified what has happened to the courts, that they've been so politicized because his prosecution was, and remember, the prosecution happened under the Trump Justice Department, not the Obama Justice Department. His Justice Department targeted Roger Stone and Paul Manafort, and it was disgraceful.
Except for the fact that it was one of the biggest questions and faux pas that I never really understood about the Trump administration. Why did he not gut that Obama Justice Department? Why did he leave those acting characters there?
And if you read deeper into what I wrote about on my blog, as you can see, that's why I call it the Trumpenstein Project. That's what I referred to Trump as. I believe that he was hired to play a role. He got a lot of people like me excited with some real populist rhetoric that nobody had been talked about for forever. I mean, no candidate had ever said the things he was saying. Nobody was like, you know, rude to CNN. And I mean, so we said, right on, that's great. And we loved it, right? But then you look at what he's doing. You know, his Justice Department did absolutely nothing. They didn't prosecute a single person, but his people got prosecuted under his Justice Department. And then when he replaced Sessions with William Barr, I mean, this is a deep state Hall of Famer that goes back to Ruby Ridge. He was a character witness for Len Horiuchi, the FBI sharpshooter that blew Vicki Weaver's head off. So to think this guy was going to drain the swamp, and Trump could not be that stupid. I believe that he was playing a part. He was an actor. And he would do things like he would allude to Joe Scarborough's dead intern, which I was the first one to write about that in the book. Lori Klosutis, you know, he had a young intern found dead with a head wound in his office, in his congressional office, and nobody did anything about it. He wasn't even questioned. And now Trump was afraid, and they went crazy. Klosutis' family went nuts when he mentioned it. But Trump, and that Roger Stone told me, because Roger Stone contacted me after he read Hidden History, and I didn't even really know much about him. And he told me how much he loved the book. And he told me at the time, Trump's going to run for president. And he said, you're going to love this guy. He knows about all the conspiracies. And so I was even more interested. And then when he did things like he mentioned Klosutis, that's an obscure conspiracy. And that told me he does know about these, but he would always nibble around the edges and he wouldn't quite go. He would go up to a point, just get them ticked off, but then he would back off. And most people don't know, for instance, about one of his three Supreme Court justice appointments were all awful. And I said it at the time, Brett Kavanaugh, not his bogus story about the ridiculous made up thing from 40 years ago, which they concentrated on, you know, the woman accusing him of doing something to her at a location she couldn't remember, on a date she couldn't remember. How are you supposed to provide an alibi for that? But that was what they focused on. All the crazy, you know, woke people saying, I believe her. Without any evidence at all, I believe her. Because I feel like it. It feels like it. But Trump had alluded to during his campaign, when he talked about Vince Foster, he said, well, you know, some people think he was murdered. He knew about that. So who did he name as Supreme Court Justice? Brett Kavanaugh, who led the whitewash into Vince Foster's investigation for Kenneth Starr.
And
he had to have known that.
And wasn't he the person who signed off on signed that the Warren Commission report was not going to be released for another, I don't know, 100 years
like
that?
Yes, he also was.
He signed off on that,
too. He was also involved in denying some information of the JFK assassination. So this was the problem with Trump, is that he, but no matter what he did, and I've called Trump Goldstein. After 1984, you know, if you remember, the fake opposition in 1984 was Emanuel Goldstein. And he was with the party members would go and they'd have the 2-minute hate every day.
Yes.
They'd just show pictures of Goldstein and they'd go crazy. Well, what was happening with people with Trump derangement syndrome? It was a 24/7 hate for Trump. So I called him Trump Goldstein because he was this figure for their hatred. And they would just go nuts and scream. And that's what people knew with Trump. And you know, all he has to do is show, oh my God, you know, turn it, they can't handle it. And but the people that are invested in, they still continue to hope. And I said at the time, you know, I'm sorry, after the January 6th thing, which was, you know, again, that's another thing, if you factor into this with the lockdown. And I've written a lot. I write for the American Free Press as well. And that's my main source of income. It isn't much, but I write regularly for there. And it's the last free newspaper in America. And they published articles by Ron Paul and Pat Buchanan, Paul Craig Roberts. So they you know, they have some good authors in there. But I've written a lot about it. To call that an insurrection, again, if you look at the video of that, you know, police waving the demonstrators, the protesters inside, they, for the most part, they stayed within the purple ropes. It was one of the most peaceful things I've ever seen. They've taken selfies. That's pretty much what they did. They tried, especially when you compare it to any BLM protest. But none of that was an insurrection. So they've used that now to hit people over the head with it. And I think they've scared people into ever protesting again. But Donald Trump got those people there in Washington, and people were finally, hey, finally going to see some arrests. We're going to do something. And then he kind of threw them under the bus real quickly. He didn't go to the Capitol where he said he was going to be. And he instantly said, go home and go in peace. And that was pretty much the last we heard. And then he gave a final middle finger, I think, to his supporters when he didn't pardon Assange or Snowden or Manning, which was disgraceful. And then instead he pardoned, you know, Blackwater criminals, the president of Death Row, rappers, and a bunch of rappers who hate him. It's like, I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense. And that's something they couldn't control. They couldn't stop. You saw with Bill Clinton and people like that, they pardoned their criminal friends on the way out the door. Trump could, the only thing he did pardon Stone, and then I guess he pardoned, I forget who he pardoned at the end, but he, so he did do that, but those were his cronies. He didn't do the right thing. And so,
and the 93,000 sealed indictments that never went anywhere. I mean, all of sort of stuff, you know, it's there. And I, you know, I have to say that I totally agree with, sadly have to agree with you, because that, you know, and it's almost like, it's like, you know, that day when there was a million people. I mean, I have a really good friend who's Lebanese. And he is just beside himself over everything that's happening. He said, everything that's happening here is exactly what happened to Lebanon, you know, back when, you know, during the Civil War and all that stuff. He said, Trump had the most important asset that anyone could ever have, the people. He had the people beside him. He got a million people to come to Washington, D.C. And what did he do? Got on an airplane and left. He said he should have stood in front of those people. And if he even got assassinated, what better thing could have happened than to be a martyr in front of your people for this country? Instead, he gets on an airplane and leaves and tells all those people to just go home. And that's the last we heard from him. I mean, it's almost like you kind of, the whole American population kind of got to this point of, we the people finally again, and now it's really over. It's almost like it got us all to the point of seeing, it's like standing at the edge of the fence and then they close the gate and now you see what it could have been. And it's really discouraging to me, you know, of where we are, because looking across the horizon of what's happening now, I mean, I will never say President Biden my whole life. I will always say Biden's handlers and Biden's people who are controlling the scenes behind the scenes of whatever's happening to our country right now. Because, and I guess that goes back to the question that I asked, do you think there's any reconciling this? Is there any goal forward for America right now that you can see?
Well, I don't, I hate to be so pessimistic, but again, you mentioned the courts and we see the courts are no answer. Because they, I mean, they wouldn't even look at evidence. I mean, it's one thing to look at it, it'd be bad enough to look at it and not see how obvious it was. But to not even look at it, that's just horrible. Especially when he supposedly has, the conservatives supposedly have a majority in the Supreme Court, it's laughable. But so the electoral process already, because they basically put their stamp of approval on it. So what's going to happen in the next election? And now if they pass HR1, which they may well do, that's going to criminalize. Could easily criminalize what we're saying here. We're criticizing the election. Well, that's criminal. And so this is part of the woke party thing. They want to criminalize all dissent. So that, to me, the courts are off. The electoral process, we can't vote them out, clearly. The press, we don't have a free press. We have things like this, and thank God we have these, but they're trying hard to get rid of things. They came after social media. They'll be coming after podcasts and blogs next. They're not going to stop because no one's, they're not encountering any resistance. Same thing, you know, my book Bullyocracy, I talk about bully. The bully's going to keep doing what they do if they don't have any resistance. And that's what they're doing. They're basically bullies. They're pushing and pushing and pushing. Americans have shown they have no tipping point. I think the best we can probably hope for is to try to start locally and hope that maybe you can start. What this pandemic has shown that is most disillusioning is not only the gullibility of the people and the fact that we are outnumbered. However you look at it, we're really outnumbered. It's sad. It's a slap in the face to know. I mean, you know, when you see the people scurrying about in their masks, those are the people you have to try to convince about political corruption, and you can't do it. If you can't even convince them on something like this, that, you know, that they're going into a restaurant with a mask and then they go to the table and take it off, or the flu's 98% gone, things like that, it doesn't matter. This, they're emotionally invested in it. But so I think that that's the best we can hope for, because what we're seeing in the people like Lori Lightfoot and the Levine that's now in the Biden administration, these horrible people that are just almost freaks of society. Those are the people that are running things at a local level, school board. But look at all the teachers we're seeing. What does that say about teachers, that they literally don't want to go back to work? And so, I mean, I said a lot of bad things about teachers and bullyocracy, because what they've done with the subject of bullying is criminal. But once you see this and you realize how bad they are at all levels, then you begin to realize we have to start at the local level. But I don't know, can we find an honest dog catcher at this point? I mean, they're so bad at all levels. So if you look at, we have to start trying to replace the mayors, the governors. I mean, this guy DeSantis in Florida, I don't know, maybe he's okay. I don't know. Kristi Noem, the one in South Dakota, I thought was good, but she recently caved on the transgender bill. So are any of them any good? And that's what made Trump so refreshing, is that Trump really was never a Republican. And that's why the Republican Party hated him. So I said at the time, he's the last Republican president. And he is. There's no question about it. Now, who do you look for in the landscape? Who's the opposition? They won't let us have, I used to talk about a third or fourth party, and my friend Cindy Sheehan, another honest person on the left, the international peace activist, who hates political correctness and who hates this administration. She's really is very dubious about the pandemic as well. He used to say, well, before we can have a third party, we have to have a second party. Mm. And she's exactly right. So That's what we now, and we really don't have a second party now, because with the Democrats getting power and all the wrong kind of Democrats, there's not a single good Democrat in Congress now that I know of. Even it's even halfway rational. And there used to be a lot of them. Cynthia McKinney, another friend of mine who was great, people like that. They don't exist now. You have the woke party, the one woke party in power. They're mad authoritarians on steroids. They don't remotely believe in free speech. They would like to throw, you know, people, they want them executed, people that were in the Capitol. They certainly want to throw them in for long prison sentences. These are, you know, how do you possibly reason with people like that? You can't vote them out. So you have to look at the local level. But the problem is you have their counterparts like Lori Lightfoot at the mayor level that are everywhere, the chiefs of police, local authorities. And we saw during the BLM protests how they sat down. They wouldn't do anything about it. Statues are being torn down. Buildings burned, stores being looted. The authorities did nothing. And when Trump talked about setting the National Guard, oh my God, they wanted to impeach him for that. But as soon as the January 6th thing happened, they sent the National Guard out, and he didn't even seem to be involved in that. And we still have 25,000 troops or so in the streets of Washington, D.C. Nobody's saying why they're there. It doesn't seem, I keep talking about it, doesn't seem to bother anybody. I mean, that's not a good look for the world, supposedly the freest country in the world. So I'd like to be optimistic. I don't know where, the only thing we can try to enlighten people, and I'm grateful that I've enlightened some, but there's so many more people that I can't enlighten. I mean, if you said something like that, especially with this pandemic thing going on, people are emotionally invested in that. That's all they care about. So they kind of lump all the other stuff in together with conspiracy. I just said, oh, that's conspiracy, you're a conspiracy theorist. And yeah, well, I'm not a theorist. As Gore Vidal, another great leftist, used to say, is I'm a conspiracy analyst. That's what I am. I'm analyzing the conspiracies, because this is what they do. They're conspirators.
Wow. They, you know, sadly, I have to agree with you. The only, you know, two glimmers of hope that I give for our country, number one is I really, like you said, we're outnumbered on every corner. I mean, we're outmoneyed, outnumbered, outpowered, outplanned. They've been planning this for a while. You know, on our side, we're always reactionary to their plan because they've been planning this for a long, long time. Is, you know, there's two things. One is my good friend, Scott Kestinger, who has a show, it's called Bards FM, and he's putting together a really big plan called County by County, of a way to take back our republic one county at a time. And he's got seven pillars that are involved with that. And Robert David Steele's looked at it, and Sasha Stone and several other pretty prominent people have said, you know, this is the last bastion of hope that we have, is, like you said, on the ground. But it is concerning. Like, can we find an honest dog catcher? Can we find a sheriff who's willing to become a constitutional sheriff, like Sheriff Richard Mack has been talking about for 40 years? I mean, put the power back in the where the power belongs and resides, is with the local sheriffs, because they are the highest law of the land and they don't even realize it. And in my opinion, we've got to put God back in the middle of it. You know, the Bible says, you know, God, with God, all things are possible, all things. And it's the only last bastion of hope that I think that we as a people in this country have.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to have faith. And I think that this is another thing that has driven this pandemic. And again, I think it's part of the wedge that's being driven. The people, the Trump derangement side, are largely people who don't have faith in God and ridicule any notion of that. But they have faith in science, trust the science, and they revere it like they would a deity. And it's become, they assume the other side hates science just because we're dubious that this isn't science. And you see, they ridicule your giant man in the sky with the white beard. I see their things all the time, how they ridicule that. But they don't, you know, they ridicule the creation, concept of creation, but they'll believe in a giant ball that burst apart, Big Bang Theory. So it's the ridiculous thing ever. How did that happen exactly? But they believe it. You can't question it. This is the problem I have dealing with people like that, but they have faith. But it's in that. I mean, you have to have faith. And I think people, there's a vacuum there that has to be filled. And so people that say they don't believe in God, they believe in something, and they believe in science. They believe in the whatever this earthly narrative is. And I think that's a lot of it too, why we encounter opposition, is because they blanch at the idea that they're going to have to answer for anything they do here. So they really hate the notion of being judged. And that's why I think I think that's the only way maybe they think they're not going to be. Some of the things that people do, their positions of power, I don't know how you can do the kind of things that they do and, you know, consign people to death or starvation. But they do it. And the only thing, they must either believe that they're not going to have to answer for anything. And it is really survival of the fittest. And it's just, you know, whatever. Hey, you know, it's tough for you. Something, but that kind of attitude is prevalent everywhere. But our only hope, I do think, is to try to maybe wake some people up at the bottom level and hope that maybe there's a groundswell that can happen. You know, Robert F. Kennedy, one of my favorite speeches, and I quote it all the time in my radio show. You know, he talked about every time a man stands up against an injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and those tiny ripples of hope coming from all over the world can form together and form a tidal wave, overcome the mightiest walls of oppression. And I love that thought. I don't know how realistic it is today, but, you know, in between that and, you know, the lessons of Gandhi or Martin Luther King, but certainly the idea that we can nonviolently resist things. But it's coming together is the hardest thing, because people are scared, and especially after the January 6th thing, rightfully so. If we saw the reaction to something that really didn't happen, that was a coup or insurrection, it's laughable. So imagine how they would react if, you know, there really was something where people tried to take Congress hostage or something like that, and they really attempted to instill a coup. So I don't know how you get past that. And again, it's one of the things they talked about when Trump left office. And again, anything with Trump, I look at skeptically, because I don't think he's going to do anything that we hope he would do. But the idea that he might form his own television network, That would be a, although again, I don't fully trust him. I think that maybe something good could get through there. Because you just one honest television network, one honest network run by somebody that was on the other side, but at the level of the Soros. And that's the problem. Why the reason why the left can continue, today's left can continue to have these kinds of protests and everything, is because they are organized, but they're financed. They're financed by people like Soros. They have this kind of, that kind of money. The other side has nobody. I mean, I guess the Koch brothers who are there, but they don't seem to finance anything like that. So, I mean, there's no organized opposition where you can, you know, we see Black Lives Matter bands and things like that with their logo on them. You don't see anything like that for, you know, Stop the Fraud or anything like that. But, so we're not going to have any of those big bucks behind us. And, we're not going to have, you know, the founding fathers were all one percenters of their day. That's why it was successful. They were very wealthy. And the closest thing we would have would be a Donald Trump. That's the only one percenter that, you know, might theoretically have a toe in our camp. Who else is there? There's nobody at that level. I mean, Ross Perot, saw what happened with Ross Perot. And that's the problem with our system. I've said many times, the only outsider we're ever going to get, because the system is rigged against average people, is a renegade millionaire. That's why I held out hope with Trump. It's theoretically possible that a guy who'd been in the inside and saw the sausage being made and made his money, but maybe didn't like it, didn't approve of it. Maybe he got to a point where, hey, you know, I'm going to try to do something about it. So I thought, well, it's possible. You know, and that's what I thought Ross Perot might be doing back in the day. But, you know, Ross Perot was slapped down pretty quickly, too. And so I don't know. We have to hope. I mean, Elon Musk is another one that's kind of a weird guy, but he says some interesting things too. But you're going to have somebody like that. There's just not enough of it. I've said before, we need at least millions, plural, to march in concert to Washington, D.C. Because it's hard to do anything about that many people. And they don't, for whatever reason, they don't like the publicity if they decided to just drop a bomb on us or something. So but you need that many people, and you can't get the, I used to get these email memes all the time that used to say, okay, everybody agree next Thursday, nobody buy gas. And that's something that could be done easily. You could always buy gas the next day or the day before, right? You couldn't get people to do that.
I know.
And so that's the problem, is you can't get them to come together, because how do you boycott things? Or whatever. I mean, every corporation does something that I object to. So, you know, it's very difficult. And I hate to be such a pessimist, but I think at this point, you know, we have to maybe look for supernatural help or something. And I think it is important to keep faith, because I have to think that there's a good side and it's a good force. And that's what we have to have faith in, because we certainly see the other side here. The evil force is prevailing everywhere.
Truly. And I've said that myself, you know, it's like, where's our billionaire? You know, they have all of them. They've got their whole Davos crowd. They've got the whole World Economic Forum crowd now. Don't we have like one? Don't we have like somebody who just has like a multimillionaire? We don't even need like a billionaire. I mean, I've said for decades, all the years that I've been involved with this, I mean, we've done it on grit and air. I mean, if we had somebody to put a few million dollars behind us, what could we accomplish? I said that before. I am not sure that even with that now, with the, it's almost like the corral has formed and the gate is closing, you know, that now with the courts stacked, now they're talking about Supreme Court stacking and putting more people on there and destroying every shred of what's left, little pieces of paper on the Constitution and on our Bill of Rights and the freedom of press and the freedom of speech. And they're going to be relentlessly coming after our guns, because it's the only thing that's standing between us and total tyranny with our government now. And you can't get anybody it's sort of like Trump derangement syndrome. People have anti-gun syndrome, no matter what you try to explain to them, and data and numbers and black on black crime, and it doesn't matter. You can't have a gun. Guns are dangerous. all the bad guys have guns, in case right. you haven't noticed, you know. So with that, Don, this has been, we could talk for hours. We're on the same page about so many things, and I hope that you'll come back and we'll do this again, and we'll talk, take about these a couple of more really deep dives on some of the discussions that we've had. So I want to thank you so much for your candid disclosure about the things we talked about. It's sure been a great conversation, and I'm both grateful and honored to learn so much about you, and I know that our members are going to really like this to our premium membership. I want everybody to really, really absolutely go and look at all of your books, because I think that they all are, you know, I admit I haven't read your book, but I've spent a lot of time on your blogs. And so if your writing in your books is anywhere even close to what your blog is, it's Keeping It Real at donaldjeffries.wordpress.com. I just can't wait to dig into your books, because your writing on your blogs are just absolutely fascinating.
It's actually keeping it unreal, because it's after my novel, The Unreal. So that's why I have it, Keeping It Unreal.
Yeah, exactly. Keeping It Unreal. So you can find all the information that we are having here at the podcast. So go to Tenpenny at drtenpenny.com. It's dr, no period, drtenpenny.com, and hover over the navigation bar. So with that, do you have any closing comments you'd like to make before we close out for today?
No, we certainly covered a lot of topics, and I'm thrilled. I've admired your work for a long time, and it's an honor to talk to you. And thanks again to our friend John Barber for mentioning me, as he does so often. And I was honored to write the foreword to his great book, Your Virgin. So, people can check that out too. But yeah, anytime I would be thrilled to come back. So anytime you want me, you know, I'm there.
All right.
I appreciate it.
So with that, I always close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, because it does inspire hope, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again next week, or until the next time, rejoice, be persistent, never give up. And everyone who's listening, have a magnificent day. Bye for now.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.